Good morning. So as Chris has just said, my name is Stefan Claussen. And as we have already heard today, I will be speaking on Luke 14, 25 to 35. But before I get into the details of what I think this scripture is saying about us about our lives, I'd like to invite you all to take a minute to think about your daily life. Think about the choices that you make every day, from the small, almost trivial ones, to the large, potentially life-changing ones. For me, every morning I wake up at about 6:15 a.m. and then have the choice to hit the snooze button on my alarm, which I almost invariably choose. And about 10 minutes later, I am presented with the same choice, at which time I usually get up. I then have about 20 minutes of non-specific free time to do with as I will. Sometimes I spend the time reading my Bible, but more often than not, I'll check my email or Facebook or maybe watch a few short videos. I then have the choice whether to shower or not, to brush my teeth or not, what I'm going to wear, what I'm going to listen to on my bus ride to work, and so on and so forth. Every day, we are bombarded with choices. And while most of them are seemingly inconsequential, each and every one of them make a difference in how our days, and indeed lives, turn out. Now, Jesus was a very powerful speaker, as I'm sure most of you know. But beyond that, he did not sugarcoat the truth. He spoke honestly to all those who followed him. He followed his Heavenly Father's direction, putting his Father first in everything. And as a result, Jesus began to have a reputation. Many people would come from all around, miles and miles away, to hear this man. Some would try to talk to him. Others would simply sit and listen. So as was his fashion, in this passage, we see a large crowd following Jesus. I don't know about you, but I picture it kind of like a press conference, where there's 100 people crowded around one man, shouting, jostling, pushing each other around, all trying to get a word in edgewise. And as soon as he opens his mouth to speak, they all hush and quiet, wanting to know what this man has to say. Now, being a rabbi or a teacher in the community, Jesus would have been accustomed to people asking him about being one of his followers, his apprentice, his disciple. In fact, we see several other times in the Bible he's asked the same question. And while his answer is always a little different, the meaning is the same. To follow Jesus is to forsake all others. Jesus says, to be my follower, you must hate everyone else by comparison, your father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even your own life. Now, it is important to clarify that I do not believe Jesus is saying that to follow him means we actually have to hate everyone, but rather that our relationship with him is to be of paramount importance in our life. So compared to our love for Jesus, our love for others must look like hate. Because given the choice to be a disciple of Jesus or to follow our friends and family, we need to be prepared to choose him. In life, we are constantly bombarded with choices, some small, others quite large. Choices ranging from where to eat and who to talk to what to do for a living, or to who to spend the majority of your life with. Sometimes choosing to follow Jesus is the simple and straightforward path. But often in life, there come other choices which can be in conflict with this. If any of you are like me, and I have to believe that a fair amount of you are, this is a struggle. I, for one, often do not even realize I have made the choices I have made. For example, I do not regularly eat breakfast. At any time of the day, I have a choice to go out and seek food. But I made that choice so long ago that I no longer even think about it. This is often the case with many of our choices. And so for many of us, we continue to make choices that are not Jesus-focused just because we no longer realize we're even making the choice. Further, for a lot of us, following Christ is fairly easy on Sunday morning. But often during the rest of the week, it is much more difficult. During lunch on Sundays, I often talk with my friends and family about what I heard in the service, how if it all affected me. But rarely ever on Monday morning, when I'm asked about my weekend, do I speak of a particular sermon. Now, not every choice can be boiled down to Jesus or not Jesus, but there are many. And more of our choices fall into this category than I think I'm comfortable admitting. Jesus knows this, and so he gave us examples of the preparation we must take in order to make our decisions. Our friends and family are just that, and I don't know a soul who's completely impervious to their persuasion, so we need to prepare. This passage is Jesus telling us that we must choose him daily, because every day our friends and family, people who we see and meet during our day-to-day activities, will present a temptation for us to follow them instead. Being Christian is to be Christ-like or a follower of Christ, choosing to follow him and sometimes to not follow others. As I said before, I have a particular issue with this. Often in my life, I've had and still do have problems putting Christ first. If I come home after a long day of work, I want to relax, sit down, microwave something, and watch TV, spend some me time, not necessarily read my Bible or spend time in prayer. When I'm out with friends and they want to go or do something that I might feel uncomfortable with or think might be contrary to God's plan in my life, I often find myself going along with the crowd instead of voicing my faith or even just stepping back from said activity. These are just a few examples from a long list of ways I choose myself or someone else over Christ, not to mention the ways I'm sure I've done this and I'm not even aware. Now, to clarify, I do not believe this is saying that it is wrong to follow your friends or to want time for yourself. What I believe this passage is telling us is that we need to put Jesus first. But there is more to this passage than having to hate your friends and family. Jesus gives us two examples to consider. The first is that of a contractor or a builder. But do not begin until you count the cost. For who would begin a construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there would be enough money to finish it? Now, anyone here who's ever worked on a big project, it doesn't have to be something physical, like a building or a tower, but anything substantial, you know that you do not just start. There is a planning phase. Contractors and construction workers are given detailed instructions of how something is to be built. When making a presentation, you have an outline so that you'll spend your time and make sure you make all your points. This is how Jesus is telling us it is to be with our faith. We must take time to prepare to see how much it would take to follow. If we run out of money and the building is half finished, then we have not accomplished anything. We need to understand what is expected of us when following Jesus. The second example is that of a king. Or what king would go to war against another king without first sitting down with his counselors to discuss whether his army of 10,000 could defeat the 20,000 soldiers marching against him? So if you're like me, you probably read this as another example of giving adequate preparation. But there's more here to that than I think. You see, after further study, I think that not only are we the kings and the queens of this example, we are the rulers of our own lives, and we are faced with constant choices. Before Jesus, I would imagine that we were all content to live our own way and do whatever we wanted. But like a ruler who sees a distant army, we are now faced with the choice about what to do in regards. We could choose to fight and likely be destroyed in the process, or we could accept this army with open arms and make peace. Joining the army of the Lord and following Jesus, or rejecting him and closing our gates. You see, the cost we must measure here is not what it would take to defeat this army, but rather what we would lose in the attempt. This story reminds me of one of my own. From the time my adult teeth set in until about 3 or 4 years ago, I did not think much about the concept of brushing my teeth. I figured it was mostly about having nice smelling breath. So I would chew gum or have a drink in the morning, and I'd be fine for the day. I did not think about the cost of not brushing my teeth. And soon, it wasn't even a choice. I just forgot about it altogether. And occasionally, I would brush my teeth still if I had something in them or a particular toothache, but those times are few and far between. It was not until about 3 to 4 years ago that I had a toothache for almost a whole semester of university, that I finally went to the dentist. According to my dentist, I had 13 cavities. 1-3. Yep. Three of which were so infected that he told me that he would likely have to pull them, if not a root canal. Further, I had irrevocably damaged my teeth, and once he had removed the substantial amount of cavity, I would have sensitive teeth and be extremely prone to new cavities because of how extensive the damage was. A choice, as seemingly unimportant, at least to me, made a huge difference in my life down the road. This is what I think Jesus is trying to point out here. That if we do not choose him daily, while it may not seem like much of a difference at the time, those choices do add up to something substantial, either way. The last few verses of this chapter seem to change the pace a bit as Jesus talks about saltiness. He says, "Salt is good for seasoning, but if it loses its flavor, how do you make it salty again? Flavorless salt is good for neither the soil nor the manure pile. It is to be thrown away." Now, in the time this was being written, salt was used for everything from flavoring and preserving to fertilizer for some crops. And yes, I checked, it was actually used for fertilizer. In this scenario, we, the disciples, are the salt. If we are not being salty or following Jesus, then we are not useful. In essence, we are just tricking ourselves. We are sitting on the shelf at home, pretending to be salt, and hoping that no one uses us and finds out. We are, as Jesus says, good for neither the soil nor the manure pile. Jesus wants to be our friend, our sibling, our parent. And like any of these roles, he wants your sincere cooperation and investment. He wants you to fully invest in the relationship and spend time with him. Now, all of these things can be very difficult to swallow. This passage clearly tells us that a decision to follow Christ should not be made lightly. Either to follow him or to disregard him, there are consequences. But what is amazing about our God is that he is a God of second chances and loving forgiveness. God understands that we are not perfect. From the beginning of time, he has known this and has endeavored to save us from ourselves. Jesus' life and death and life again are examples of this. Often, I find myself ignoring my relationship with God for days and, unfortunately, sometimes even weeks at a time. And while that is sad, my God is a God of forgiveness, and there is no anger when coming back to him. Rather than being upset at the time I haven't spent, he rejoices with me in the time that I have. In my own story, while I ignored my teeth for so long, I prayed and asked my Father for help and healing, and he was faithful. You see, as many choices as we make that do not honor Jesus, we only ever need to ask for forgiveness to be given the chance to try again. Little did I know at the time of my toothaches that recently my dad had just received a dental plan for the family, and as a result of being still in school, I was actually covered, which was a first time for us. This ended up saving me several $1,000s. My dentist did not insult or condemn me for my poor dental hygiene, but rather told me of a medicine he wanted to try, and though he wasn't terribly optimistic, it was preferable to losing teeth, at least the chance. So he put these very small capsules in the worst of my teeth, sealed them up, and told me to wait for a few months and pray. During this time, Jesus showed me his grace in the removal of pain, and when I went back to check on the progress, my teeth had healed enough that they did not need to be removed. So when you go out today, I encourage you to think about the choices you make regularly in your daily life, to think about the choices maybe you no longer make, and challenge you to choose Jesus whenever the option presents itself, and know that what awaits you is a loving embrace. Thank you.